Your new book is called Bottomland. Tell me a little about it.
So Bottomland is the story of two young sisters that disappear from a German-American family farm in 1920 rural Iowa. And it's based very, very loosely on a family legend of two of my great aunts who supposedly disappeared. But it's highly fictionalized.
Wow. Now, what happened with your great aunts? Were they found?
I haven't actually gotten the story. The story is mixed. Some people say that they never went. Some people say that they were never found again. Some people say one was found, another wasn't. And my mother kept saying, well, you need to talk to your cousins. They're in their 90s. You need to talk to them before they can't talk anymore to find out what really happened. But I decided I didn't want to know. I had a particular family photograph, and this is how I found out about the story. By my own aunt showed me this photograph, and all the characters just spoke to me right out of that photograph, even though I never knew these people. And I already had the storyline basically in my head of what I wanted to write. So I didn't want the real story to get in the way. And I don't know if it really is out there to know anyway. So that's what I did.
Very interesting. The inspiration for your first novel, The Quickening, was an old journal that you'd found that was written by your great-grandmother. So talk a little more about the inspirations for this new book, how you created something out of just an old family fiction, really.
Right. So my aunt, I visited her out in California, and she was ill. And we were looking through some old family photographs, and she showed me a picture of my grandmother, who I never met. And in that picture is all her siblings. And she pointed to two girls that are sitting right next to a very stern-looking father figure. And she said, these are your two great aunts. They disappeared. And I was almost 40 at the time, and I thought, well, why haven't I heard this story? I was really shocked by it, and I got really drawn in by the idea of these two women who supposedly left, and they're the two youngest sisters of the family. They were called the little girls in the family. And supposedly, I think the story that I've followed at least is that of the two girls, one looks very submissive and quiet. She's the youngest, and her name is Merle. The other one is very mischievous. She has a bowl haircut like a boy. And at that time period, that would have been very kind of risque. But the older one is the one that actually returned home, and the younger one is the one who stayed away. So I was really curious of what would make the good girl stay away while the more mischievous, adventurous one chose to return home. And supposedly my aunt had gotten a phone number for my great aunt Merle, and she was living under an entirely different name, first and last name. And my aunt tried to call her, and a woman picked up and said, no, you have the wrong number, and hung up on her. Well, my aunt was very tenacious, so she called again. And the woman said, well, yes, you have the right number, but I'm not her. I'm her caregiver, and she's ill. And the woman hung up on her. And so my aunt called again, and the woman said, yes, I'll take your information, but she's ill. She'll call you back as soon as she can. My aunt never got a call back, and actually my aunt died not too long after that. In my aunt's journal, though, my aunt says about this call that she actually thinks she wasn't talking to the caregiver, that she was actually talking to my Aunt Merle. So that ended the story. So I had the beginning of the story with the family photograph and the girls leaving, and that as the end of the story. And that's all I know. So I filled in the between, yeah.
Okay, what a great story. You grew up in Ames. You descended from four generations of Iowa farmers. I guess it's only natural both of your books are set here in Iowa. The new one is post-World War I. How do you go about painting the picture of Iowa from that era?
It was really fascinating. So the original family that this happened to were not German-American, but I was really interested in following that line because I'm about half German-American, and when I was younger, I refused to identify that way. I thought I called myself French because my name is Michelle, or I called myself Irish. I was just very uncomfortable with the idea that we had this kind of Hess family background. And so I was really interested in this book to look into this idea of kind of a shaming that becomes inherited when people are ostracized in their own country. And that happened to German Americans, not in World War II, as I first thought. That's when I first was going to focus the book on, but it happened in World War I. And apparently in Iowa, states across the United States prohibited foreign languages and the German language to be spoken, but Iowa went further than anybody else. Governor Harding had a law called the Babel Proclamation in 1917, and he actually outlawed all foreign languages in public and private spaces. It only lasted for 7 months, but even within that time, women talking on party lines were actually arrested for doing so. People were arrested in graveyards for praying over their loved ones in German. And by the end of World War I, throughout the Midwest, 18,000 people had been arrested or fined by going against these laws. So that's when I found, like, oh, that's my time period. That's what I want to grab a hold of. And then I just kind of followed that link, and the research is really complex because the book also then goes to Chicago. But I love this kind of stuff. I think it really feeds a story and makes it very real to me.
You're making four stops in Iowa on this tour, Dubuque this weekend, later this month, Des Moines, Ames, and Iowa City. Talk a little about how you conduct your appearances and what all you do.
It kind of depends. Sometimes it depends on what happened the night before and what people are most interested or not. I oftentimes will actually hand out the photograph that started the book because I think it gets kind of people's imaginations going. And I talk about what I made up off of that and kind of the process of creating fiction off a real event and the freedoms that you have to do so. And then I will usually read a passage or two. And it depends on what, you know, we had a big snowstorm out here in Boston and I had a reading to do the next night. So I actually decided to read a passage of one of my characters actually gets lost in a snowstorm. I thought that would be kind of appropriate. And then after that, we just open it up to discussion. And usually people have a lot of their own family stories that they want to share, which to me is really fascinating. Or they have their own German-American background that they want to talk about. Or we talk even about how some of those anti-German-American feelings resonates today with some of the things that are happening today with anti-immigration sentiment. So it's really pretty open, and I kind of follow where the audience wants to go.